On Tuesday, American Special Operations Forces announced they'd captured Ahmed Abu Qatala, the man believed to be the leader of the 2012 attack on the U.S. diplomatic mission in Benghazi that killed that U.S. ambassador, as I mentioned. Qatala is being transported to the U.S., where he will face a federal indictment and apparently be adjudicated, tried, something, in U.S. courts. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, joins me now. This was a bombshell on Capitol Hill. Todd, what was the reaction?
Yeah, it sure was, John. And the reaction was one of joy. Everybody's happy that Qatala has been captured. And then the aftermath, an old aftermath and some familiar arguments, because, as you mentioned, Qatala is being charged with federal crimes and charged and tried in federal court, presumably. The main charge against him, killing a person in the course of an attack on a federal facility. There are other charges, but that's the most important one. That one carries the potential of the death penalty. Now, you said that Qatala is going to be transported and tried, but part of the question is, where is he now? And we'll get to that. But there has been an age-old debate during this war on terror, and you're familiar with it. People captured like this in the war on terror, are they criminals or are they terrorists? Do they get tried in court or tried in military tribunals in places like Guantanamo Bay? Listen to Dianne Feinstein here. She's both the senior member, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and also a member of the Judiciary Committee. He's got a foot in both camps here. Listen to Feinstein.
I always prefer the federal court to a military commission because a federal court has had a remarkable record of achievement. We spent convicted close to 500 terrorists in federal court and very few in military commissions.
But in federal court, doesn't that mean that the defendant can bring up the original story we were told, that it was this anti-Islamic movie that caused a riot, that caused the death, and don't we have to prove that he's the trigger man, all that sort of stuff?
All of that stuff. And John, more to the point, in the present moment, what about interrogating him? If he's read his Miranda rights, he doesn't have to say anything and he gets a lawyer. We've heard this debate before. And, you know, we've almost seen this exact movie before. Last year, they nabbed Abu Anas al-Libi off the streets in Libya. He had already been charged 13 years ago for the bombing in Kenya, the embassy in Kenya, in 1998. And you know what they did with al-Libi? They held him aboard a ship and they interrogated him before he was delivered to prosecutors. And reports are that that's exactly where Ahmed Abu Qatala is now, being held aboard a ship for up to 30 days. Now, listen to Lindsey Graham.
Hold on one second. So the possibility is he hasn't been read his Miranda rights if he's on a military warship right now.
And that is exactly right. And under the Geneva Convention, you're supposed to hold prisoners of war on land-based facilities, not on ships. You can transport them on ships. And now you see all the gray legal areas that we are in again with Qatala, that we were in with al-Libi and several other prisoners. Now, I do want to play you Lindsey Graham here, who says he's all for prosecuting a guy like Qatala if that's what the administration is going to do, but don't give up the chance to interrogate him in detail before he's Mirandized, before he has a lawyer. Listen.
You need to put him in a land-based facility where professional interrogators can establish a relationship with him. If the enemy knows, just hang on for 30 days, you're okay, they will. What gets you good intelligence is rapport and uncertainty. You're losing both.
Now, if he's interrogated as a terrorist, does that aid his defense if the interrogators do something that then, you know, becomes an issue in court? We've seen that in other cases down in Guantanamo.
And this would be a very different scenario than Guantanamo. The ambiguity of keeping somebody like Qatala aboard a ship, transporting him aboard a ship, of course, under the Geneva Conventions, he can't be held there, but he can be transported there before he's delivered to prosecutors to be interrogated in the legal way. Now, you might say Gitmo's still open. Can't the Obama administration just put him there if they wanted to? And then you remember the old argument. The Obama administration wants Gitmo closed. They don't want to put any prisoners there, and that's Lindsey Graham's suspicion here about why we're dealing with the idea of a Navy ship. Listen.
So what they're doing is they're going to hold him. I don't know how long they're holding him, probably no longer than 30 days. Then they're going to send him to New York, read him his Miranda rights, and there goes intelligence gathering.
And you think the Obama administration is doing this in this case to make a point about this age-old debate about Article
3? No, I think they just can't use Gitmo. I think there's no place to put him. Once you take Gitmo off the table, where do you put him?
Do people on Capitol Hill believe that this fellow is some kind of international terrorist mastermind? It seems to me that Ahmed Abu Qatala is, you know, a low-grade warlord in Libya who is involved in a country in complete total chaos and doesn't have much to tell the U.S. besides what happened at the embassy, if anything.
And that's part of the important debate about Katala right now. Look, there's some great reporting in our partner, the New York Times, by David Kirkpatrick, about who Katala is and what he was up to. And John, you're right. According to that reporting, no, there's a lot of suspicion that he was not intimately connected with al-Qaeda, that he was kind of a lone wolf with some followers. The problem with the Benghazi attack is that there's also a lot of suspicion that Katala was a ringleader, but that other groups in Benghazi might have come along later in the attack and also participated. It's very muddy. So that also, you're correct, that leads to the question about what good you get out of interrogating him for a long time. You have to do it to find out what he knows, but do you hold him as an al-Qaeda operative? He probably isn't that.
And so he's on this 30-day cruise, according to Lindsey Graham right now. And in the meantime, people on Capitol Hill are going to be dealing with the roll-up of Iraq right now. They're definitely going to be the possibility that this trial of Abu Katala could actually be about the very same issues that this special committee looking into the aftermath of the Benghazi attack. All that will be raised in open court here in New York. So this may be playing directly into the Republicans' hands.
It may be or it may not be. It would probably depend on what Katala has to say. Also, don't forget that a lot of people were accusing the Obama administration of dragging their feet in bringing the perpetrators of the Benghazi attack to justice. If Katala is the man they think he is, that kind of quells that accusation, John.
Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much.
You bet.
So for more about all of this, particularly the legal implications, we go to Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Karen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
So he's hardly another Osama bin Laden, but the Obama administration seems to be treating him like one, accused of carrying out the plot to attack the U.S. diplomatic mission in Benghazi, Libya. Do you think Ahmed Abu Katala is going to play in this federal court setting? Is this an appropriate hearing place for this particular set of crimes?
Of course. The federal courts, as you and I have discussed many times, can try these terrorism defendants. You know, one thing about raising the Guantanamo issue is that there is no way that I can see that he would have gone to Guantanamo. The detainees there are specifically associated with al-Qaeda or the Taliban. That is not exactly where this defendant would fit. This may be part of the war on terror, but it is not part of the war that was launched by the authorization to use military force or by Guantanamo. The possibility was not Guantanamo, but perhaps a military commission, perhaps on U.S. soil. And that option has been taken off the table. And they've underscored that, the administration has, by bringing him into the federal court system and indicting him there.
So is this a model trial that suggests what might be done with the other people at Guantanamo, or is it apples and oranges?
It can speak to both issues. Any federal trial that takes place in federal court that has to do with a high-level or allegedly high-level terrorism suspect apprehended abroad, accused of wanting to attack the United States, can be a model for the Guantanamo detainees. That can be. But it's not a model any more than so many past trials and current trials have been for people, defendants who are in U.S. custody, apprehended abroad, who have been going through the federal court system for the past 2.5 decades.
You did hear Todd Zwillig talking about the questions on Capitol Hill of, do we give up the opportunity to interrogate this defendant? And we should interrogate him about all sorts of other intelligence issues. What is the potential that that interrogation process might jeopardize the ability to prosecute him because of the way he was treated, the sort of open season kind of fishing expedition that some of these interrogations can take?
Well, there's two separate issues there. One is his treatment in custody, and the other one is interrogation without Miranda. And I just want to separate them for listeners. His interrogation while in custody, his treatment while in custody, is unlikely to be at issue. This enhanced interrogation policy that was set up by the Bush administration was backed away from by the Bush administration and has been ended by the Obama administration. So I can't imagine that that will come up. On the issue of his not being read his Miranda rights, that will be an issue. It will be brought up. But my guess is it's not going to make any impact on the prosecution at all. We saw this with Abdulmutallab, the Christmas Day bomber in 2009. The red flag was raised then. It doesn't matter. The federal courts are going to try these guys. They're going to make whatever rules, new rules they need. They're going to be flexible about the rules that exist. And so while it's an issue for civil libertarians and others, whether they claim a public safety exception or another issue, the fact is, it will be raised by the defense for sure. But these trials take place with increasing ease, with increasing flexibility, and I can't imagine impeding the prosecution.
Very quickly, is there a difference between someone being attacked on the street who is an American by a Libyan and in a diplomatic facility being attacked? Does that make this more likely to be in federal court?
We have the embassy bomb. That's a good question. We have the embassy bombings trials from 1998 that have been through the federal courts twice and that are going to go through the federal courts again. I think from the point of view of this administration, it doesn't matter. They're going to try these individuals in federal court. They've made that point quietly and loudly, and they're making it again.
Karen Greenberg, Director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Thanks so much, Karen.
Thank you.
Next up on The Takeaway, when it comes to Iraq, does Iran hold all the cards right now as Iraq and the region continue to spiral into chaos? What responsibility does the U.S. still have to Iraq and its people? You can call us with your view at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Be a part of the conversation. Find us also at facebook.com/The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science. Neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.